Ever wonder why some atrocities dominate headlines while others barely register? Why certain elections are celebrated as democratic triumphs while similar ones elsewhere are dismissed as shams? These aren't random editorial decisions, but predictable outcomes of a media system designed to serve power. In Manufacturing Consent, Noam Chomsky and Edward Herman reveal how mainstream media functions not as an independent check on authority, but as a sophisticated mechanism that naturally aligns with elite interests. This isn't about journalists receiving secret orders, it's about institutional structures that filter news through predictable patterns, creating a system where consent is manufactured rather than informed. The result? A narrowed public debate that serves those already in power while marginalizing dissenting voices and alternative perspectives. The propaganda model identifies five filters that determine what becomes news. First, ownership concentration means nine corporations now control most American media. When Gulf Plus Western withdrew funding from public television after an anti-corporate documentary, the message was clear. Questioning corporate power threatens the business model. Second, advertising dependency transforms audiences from citizens into consumers. Media primarily sells your attention to advertisers, not news to you. This creates targeting tools like CBS's client audience profile, focusing on wealthy consumers while ignoring less profitable demographics. Third, sourcing bias emerges as journalists rely on government and corporate sources for information. These sources subsidize media with press facilities, advance copies, and ready-made content that reduce news gathering costs. Fourth, flack, organized negative responses to media content, disciplines journalists who stray too far. Corporate-funded organizations like Accuracy in Media pressure media toward business-friendly narratives. Finally, dominant ideology, originally anti-communism, but now broader pro-capitalist, pro-American exceptionalism, frames which stories matter and how they're told. These filters function like invisible hands guiding coverage toward conclusions that support existing power structures, not through conspiracy, but through institutional logic and market forces. Imagine two priests murdered for political activism. One, killed by Polish police in a Soviet bloc country, receives extensive coverage, 10 front-page New York Times stories, condemning editorials, and detailed television reports of his torture. The other, murdered in U.S.-allied El Salvador, gets virtually no attention. Why? This pattern of worthy versus unworthy victims consistently appears in media coverage. When four American churchwomen were murdered by Salvadoran National Guard members in 1980, coverage remained minimal. Secretary Haig falsely claimed they were killed running a roadblock, while UN Ambassador Kirkpatrick suggested they were political activists, implying they were legitimate targets. Similarly, 23 religious workers murdered in Guatemala between 1980-85 received little attention. When American priest Stanley Rother was killed, the Times published only a tiny back-page article with no follow-up. This double standard serves political purposes, directing public outrage toward official enemies while minimizing crimes by U.S. allies receiving American military support. This isn't coincidence, but a predictable outcome of the propaganda model in action. What makes an election free and fair? According to mainstream media coverage, it depends less on actual democratic conditions than on alignment with U.S. interests. In El Salvador, a U.S. ally, elections held during a state of siege, with murdered opposition leaders, shuttered newspapers, and mandatory voting under threat of punishment, were celebrated as steps toward democracy. Meanwhile, Nicaragua's 1984 election, which international observers found reasonably fair, with secret ballots, no state-killed journalists, and permitted opposition, was dismissed as a sham by U.S. media. The New York Times demonstrated this bias quantifiably, focusing on election mechanics for El Salvador while ignoring basic democratic conditions. For Nicaragua, coverage emphasized fundamental conditions never mentioned regarding El Salvador. This pattern reveals how media frames democracy based on alignment with U.S. foreign policy rather than actual democratic principles. When you hear an election described as flawed or a model for the region, consider what standards are being applied and why. When Turkish extremist Mehmet Ali Agca shot Pope John Paul II in 1981, he initially claimed no foreign involvement. Only after 17 months in Italian prison with numerous intelligence official visits did he suddenly confess to being hired by the KGB and Bulgarian secret services. Media coverage was dominated by just three figures: Claire Sterling, former CIA officer Paul Henze, and writer Michael Ledeen, who accounted for 76% of airtime on key television segments, with no opposing viewpoints presented. The narrative contained glaring inconsistencies media ignored. Would professional Soviet intelligence entrust a sensitive operation to an unstable right-wing criminal with no communist connections? Why would Bulgarian agents participate directly, eliminating any plausible deniability? When Italian courts failed to convict the Bulgarian defendants in 1986, media outlets rationalized the outcome rather than examining their role in promoting the theory. Later, former CIA officers revealed that agency analysts had concluded no Bulgarian connection existed, but CIA leadership had deliberately politicized intelligence to support Reagan administration propaganda. This case demonstrates how media organizations become willing participants in political messaging when stories align with dominant ideological frameworks, sacrificing skepticism for narratives that fit prevailing Cold War assumptions. Despite claims of an adversary press undermining the Vietnam War, television coverage through 1967 remained overwhelmingly optimistic about American military progress. Networks sanitized the war's brutality by removing excessively grisly footage of civilian casualties and napalm victims. Coverage displayed profound American-centric bias, with about 95% of broadcast time devoted to American military perspectives. Vietnamese civilians, whether supporters or opponents, were virtually invisible, their experiences systematically excluded. Even as public opinion turned against the war, television news never questioned core assumptions about defending democracy against aggression. This explanatory gap led many Americans to attribute failure to treason rather than examining the intervention's fundamental flaws. The PBS Vietnam documentary series shows how media creates balanced coverage through frameworks that exclude fundamental criticism. While harshly criticizing French colonialism, it uses different terminology for American involvement, transforming Vietnamese rebels into communists or the enemy. The possibility that America was effectively attacking South Vietnam remains unthinkable within the series' framework. Despite nine conglomerates now controlling virtually all major media outlets, significant counterforces exist with growing potential. The digital revolution has created unprecedented spaces for independent journalism to circumvent traditional gatekeepers. Independent news websites, investigative platforms, and citizen journalists have broken major stories ignored by mainstream outlets, from Occupy Wall Street to police brutality cases. Social media platforms, despite corporate ownership, enable rapid information sharing during crucial moments like the Arab Spring and environmental disasters, allowing suppressed stories to reach mass audiences through viral sharing. Creating truly independent media requires understanding these systemic forces and building alternative structures. Subscription-based journalism, crowd-funded news platforms, and cooperative media organizations offer promising models. The propaganda model has gained relevance in the digital age. As we navigate this complex information ecosystem, we must examine the institutional structures and power relationships that determine which stories receive attention and how they're framed. Only by recognizing these patterns can we become informed citizens rather than managed spectators in a constructed information environment.